I've spent the better part of my adult life living in Southwest Alaska, and even after all these years, it never ceases to amaze me how, once we start to lose snow, just how fast it goes, irrespective of how much of it we actually had on the ground. My wife and youngest daughter went in for a medical checkup for my daughter's knee. They left a little over a week ago. Complications to her knee meant that they stayed in Anchorage for a little over a week. The original timeline called for about 48 hours. I bring that up because the day they left, it still very much looked like winter in our yard. I was still contemplating how many more times I'd have to plow. At this point, that number looks like zero. When they finally get home, later today, our yard is going to look like winter was a long time ago. Most of the drive, the gravel and dirt underneath, is exposed, and any berms we had are a fraction of the size they were a week ago. Longer days, warmer days, and wind can and will do that to snow. Even so, it still fascinates me how quickly it disappears. And the short message to that, I guess, as it is every year at about this time, is that winter is dead, and spring is actually here. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. I love winter. I've never made any secret of that. I've said that before here and in other places, and I think I'll keep saying it. I've had friends suggest that as I get older, I won't enjoy winter as much, or at some point it will come to seem like more of a hassle. Well, that hasn't happened yet. Sometimes I wonder if that's creeping up a bit, but I don't think it is. I still smile when I have to plow our drive, and when I went on a really long snow machine ride a few weeks back, I felt so invigorated by every part of it. So no, I think I still really love winter. That said, I'll not deny this. Now that its demise is once again imminent, and there's no hope of resuscitating it, I'm ready to move on, as quickly as possible, to the non-snow part of the calendar. There are several things that serve as annual harbingers of the fact that that's getting close. Most folks are likely either getting summer stuff ready or chomping at the bit to do so, maybe gear-related to boating or fishing or camping. With regards to camping, I had an opportunity earlier this week to visit with Dillingham 6th graders about tents as a part of their week-long career and cultural exploratory week. Our office was invited to take part, thanks Jill and Carl, and I was given pretty free rein to choose a topic, as long as there was a connection to the outdoors and careers. I chose tents. I spent a half hour or so going over a presentation with the kids regarding tent history, tent types, the qualities to look for, and advice on setting up tents. Then we spent the next 90 minutes with hands-on practice at setting up tents of various sizes and types in the high school gym. I'd like to think that the kids had a good time and maybe learned a little something. I know I did. If you'll be in the market for a new tent yourself this spring or summer, here's a few things I'd recommend. Get a tent that has a waterproof rating of at least 1,500 millimeters, and more is better. Choose aluminum poles if you're able, as they're more durable and lighter than fiberglass. Always select a tent that has a rain fly that goes all the way to the ground. And if you're selecting a larger tent, get one with a nice big roomy vestibule. You'll be glad you did. If you need any further help with ideas about tents, maybe hit up one of Dillingham's 6th graders. I'm sure they'd be happy to help. Another sure sign of spring returning is when you hear folks talking about seeing various sorts of migratory birds returning, with geese often being one of the most visible. This is happy news for people with different interests. For those who enjoy bird watching, we'll be getting to see a few more species beyond redpolls, nuthatches, and ravens. Not that there's anything wrong with redpolls, nuthatches, and ravens. And for those who enjoy hunting, April 2nd marked the beginning of the 2018 Alaska Subsistence Spring-Summer Migratory Bird Harvest Season, which means that returning ducks and geese, as well as a whole host of other species, are once again fair game to harvest. There are a few things you have to stick to in order to legally hunt for migratory birds in the spring. If you're over 18 years old, you are required to have a state hunting license and a state duck stamp. Except for disabled veterans, those 60 or older, and those that qualify for a low-income license. You do not have to have a federal duck stamp for the subsistence season. That changed a few years ago. To say that again, No federal duck stamp. Yes, a state hunting license, and yes, a state duck stamp. State stamps and hunting licenses are available from state license vendors, ADF&G offices, and online. State duck stamps must be signed in ink across the face and must be carried at all times while hunting waterfowl, but are not required for hunting non-waterfowl species. Also, you do have to use shot shells that have non-lead shot in them. That's actually been an across-the-board can't-do item since 1991, which means that waterfowl hunting has been a lead-free event, officially and legally, for close to 3 decades. Lead is toxic. What you have to use is non-toxic shot. Non-toxic shot is defined as any shot type that does not cause sickness and death when ingested by migratory birds. Some common types of metals used in place of lead include steel, tungsten, and bismuth, as well as combinations and alloys of those. Each has its pros and cons, as well as its supporters and detractors. And it's not just using lead shot. You can't even be in possession of it while you're hunting migratory birds. So if you have an assortment of shot shells for various species, to include upland birds, and that might include lead shot shells, rattling around in a day pack, shoulder bag, or pocket, take care to make sure none of them are lead shot when you're hunting waterfowl. By the way, the booklet with the regulations for the spring-summer season is out. A bunch showed up earlier this week at our office, and they can be found in other places around town as well. There's a short list of prohibited harvest items, beyond no lead shot, and a lot of them seem pretty common sense to me. For example, no shotguns larger than 10-gauge, battery or machine guns, fish hooks, poisons, drugs, or explosives. No shooting from a sink box or low-floating device that conceals the hunter beneath the surface of the water. Ditto hunting from any type of aircraft, hunting with the aid of recorded bird calls, or using live birds as decoys. Furthermore, you may not use any vehicle, aircraft, or boat to concentrate, drive, rally, or stir up any migratory birds. No shooting across or from a road or highway. Specific to us around Bristol Bay, no airboats or jet skis for hunting or transporting hunters. Certainly a lot of people will be getting geeked up to go fishing, whether commercial, sport, or subsistence. We're probably not far off from a certain sign of summer being seen around downtown. I'm talking about the overnight influx of out-of-town people shopping at our stores. Most of these people, if not all of them, will be tied to fishing in some way. But local folks are getting ready too, getting their gear ready and making plans, whether that's in advance of getting ready for their subsistence efforts or planning for a lot of sport fishing up one of our area's many rivers. One of my hunting buddies just bought a new large tent from Cabela's for king season for up the Nishigak. I'm guessing many people are in a similar preparation mode. Whatever your level of involvement with fishing, one thing is for sure, the clock is ticking. Time is melting away just about as fast as the snow. Along with the return of longer hours of sunlight, people from out of town, migratory birds, and potholes, spring also marks the reemergence of area bears, and I've already heard a story or two about bears being spotted, which seems about right. Bears will normally awaken and re-enter the world in April or May, with the boars being the first to do so, and sows with cubs being the last. Also, females that went into the den pregnant give birth about 2 months into hibernation. Cubs are a bit under a pound when born, and by the time they come out of the den, like in the next few weeks, they'll weigh something like 30 pounds and be ready for mama to show them how the world works. Tied to bears, it's likely that those who enjoy bear hunting are either starting to look around for bears or will be in the coming days and weeks. Brown bear season ends on the last day of May. In closing today, I'd like to offer up congratulations to this year's Alaska Migratory Bird Calendar Contest winners. The local winners were selected at the local judging contest back in early March. The statewide judging event was held earlier this week in Anchorage. Area students who were selected as local winners include from Aleknagik, Tristan Andrews, Allison Andrews, Thomas Noden, Karen Andrews, and Jaron Tinker. From Kaliganik, Torrance Andrew, and Asante Barnes. From Manicotic, Ronald Coolidge. And from Dillingham, Kara Tilden, Alex Beholm, Madison Thiel, Everett Ray, Geisa Ray, Piper Gonzalez, Chelsea Kropoff, and Aubrey Kayakluk. Entries from those students were sent to Anchorage for the statewide contest. From those, two were selected as statewide winners, Tristan Andrews and Karen Andrews, both of Elecnagik. Those two students will have their posters appear on next year's calendar. Congratulations to one and all, and thanks to everyone, students, schools, teachers, and parents, who support this contest. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.